at the Hall Winery in St. Helena in Napa Valley, California, stands a life-size statue of a camel contemplating an enormously oversized needle. The needle is so scaled up that the camel has to stretch to see through the needle's eye. The eye is still much too small for the camel to even stick its head through. The camel's resolute expression indicates that it's convinced it will eventually find a way to get through that needle. Well, this piece of artwork naturally calls to mind the analogy Jesus refers to in today's gospel. Jesus tells his disciples, "It is easier for a camel to fit through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven." This piece of art, a camel contemplating a needle, seems an odd choice for a winery frequented by its many wealthy patrons. Aren't the wealthy patrons disturbed by the apparent reminder that their passage into heaven would be impossibly small even if it were 100 times wider? Well, does this image alarm you? It does me. As churchgoers, we hear this gospel over and over again without being compelled to sell our possessions. Like the camel statue, even when the evidence to the contrary stares us in the face, we still believe that we can find a way through the needle without ever changing. Well, let's look at the excuses we make to hold on to our possessions. Jesus doesn't really mean what he said literally. It's merely symbolic or suggestive. This is Jesus' tendency to exaggerate, or his assurance that all things are possible with God. We say, "Oh, it's simply necessary to be detached from worldly goods, not to actually give them up." Some even hedge by pointing out that Jesus' advice might not be universally applicable. In the light of this gospel, the question becomes not, can we hold on to our possessions and still get into heaven, but why would we want to hold on to our possessions? Now, the young man in the gospel seems like a perfect candidate for a follower, doesn't he? I mean, he's a law-abiding, decent fellow. The disciples must have been imagining what they could do with this guy's money, his connections, and his influence. I mean, who wouldn't want a follower, a volunteer with good morals, who also brings great financial resources to join their ranks of discipleship? Well, this man who leaves, we assume to return to his riches, is the only sad person in any of today's scriptures. Others are enriched, joyful, or astonished and impressed by God's ways. The truth is, all of us, whether we have a lot of money or very little of it, are tempted to place too much importance on wealth. We can allow our minds and hearts to circle endlessly around this pursuit. We can allow our sense of purpose and value to get tied to the fluctuating number of a portfolio or bank account. This man, one gospel says, is young, trusted his wealth, needed his wealth, and took security and identity from his wealth, more than he trusted, needed, or looked to security and identity from his relationship with God in this Jesus he has met and come to know. So we might want to ask ourselves, in what ways are we just like him? In those ways, we do well to hear Jesus calling us, exposing our false gods, and bidding us to higher and more secure calling. But this gospel is really not just about money either. We must allow our money to be in service to God, taking the role of a faithful steward of God's abundance. We must direct and manage our abundance with a constant and joyous eye toward the purposes and presence of God in the world. The truth is, money in itself is neither divine nor demonic. Only the use of money, the relationship of the soul to money, that is the question here. So take a quick inventory of your possessions. What, if anything, would you be willing to give up, to give away for Jesus' sake and for the sake of the gospel? Do you find your grip tightening even as we are talking about this inconvenient truth? Having more than we need can be a sign that we haven't loved our suffering neighbors enough to use our gifts to help them. The pursuit and enjoyment of material comfort can obscure our dependence on God or distract us from following God's will. I'd like you for a moment to imagine yourself sitting at a poker table in Harrah's Casino in downtown New Orleans. You eye your hand of cards, calculating the odds and the risk. You scan the expressions of the other players at your table. You look at your stack of chips. And then, with a deep breath, you push your entire stack of chips across the table, risking everything on the odds that you have the winning hand. And you say, "I'm all in." Only at the table of generosity is there any joy or any real peace or any lasting wealth. This is the way the portfolios of heaven are measured. And when we understand and live this gospel truth, holding our portion of God's abundance with a light and generous hand, it is then that angels weep for joy that someone went all in. As we approach the table of the Eucharist, at which we celebrate Jesus' self-emptying, are we able to say, "I'm all in"?